Hello, welcome to the Tour Gamer. I'm your host, Rob. Welcome to Stream Street Day 147. At some point, I'm just going to stop saying the number because it's boring me. But I'm joined today by the wonderful, the powerful. I don't think you have two names. It's just Big Sean. Is that right?
There's a story behind it, but that's boring as fuck. But yeah, my name's Sean. Hey, lads. Hey, guys. How's it going? I am a big motherfucker. Thick, I think, is how they say it on the internet.
Yeah, powerful is how I would describe it. Now, Sean is a lovely, lovely bloke. I've had the opportunity to spend two different CanCons with him. I think we were at both, right? I've really enjoyed those and my interactions with him. But like, the problem is with something like CanCon, is you're talking to everyone for like 5 minutes and you're done.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to talking to you today. Also, if you want to hear from more from Big Sean after this, you got your own podcast. Like, I don't think you really need that much of an introduction, right? Do you want to? I also have a hat for that podcast, which I love, I would like to say.
Oh, fuck, you caught me with my pants down. Yeah, I don't have it with me. Yeah, it's called Notorious Age of Sigma. So it's me and my co-host, who is also called Sean. The whole idea was Biggie Smalls, because I'm a big fat white guy, which is like the demographic of the wargaming scene. And he's like a short, muscular bodybuilder guy, which is not the demographic of our wargaming scene. So that was meant to be the joke, the whole Biggie Smalls play on words, but, and plus fucking bodybuilders hate it when they call you small. But yeah, so we are from New Zealand, as Rob may or may have not mentioned, I can't recall. And we talk about the New Zealand community and what we do and how we like to go to Australian win tournaments and the rest of it. So yeah, that's more or less us. We just try give the hobby spin with a New Zealand lens, and hopefully our international listeners enjoy it, because our international listeners are far bigger than our local player base. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was really interesting this week. Obviously I had Aiden on last week. I had the wonderful Matt on from Texas the other day. I found out that Texas has got more people in than Australia, which kind of blew my mind. So I was wondering also if the New Zealand community wanted to go to Texas and win all of their events as well. I'm not really sure how, like, if you guys also want to do that, because I think that's a plane trip, you could do that, because you guys dominate the Australian competitive scene, is that correct?
Yeah, I think objectively dominate is the correct phrase, but yes, no, we do like to win, and Texas, it's a bit of a mission, so maybe not, but yes, we do seem to travel well for our small size, which is just odd. But it is what it is. So no, we like to play Warhammer, man. We put our own spin on it like the Aussies do. I mean, like, the first time you were exposed to Australia a couple of years ago, you would have been like, what the fuck are these guys up to? What are they doing? This is really weird.
Yep.
And then you sort of, you know, we're like the special weird sauce that comes with the main meal that is Australia. So yeah, we're just the poor cousins further over that just do our own thing and win tournaments, apparently. But we like to throw shade because we're small and we can.
Yeah, and who's going to argue with you, I think, is the real... I mean, number one, who's going to hear you? But number two, who's going to argue with you?
Yeah. Yes. The first point is very correct, yes, yeah.
Well, so wonderful to talk to you and have you on the show. Thank you, everyone, for joining us live, by the way. I see you all. Yes Meatballs, Grinaldi, Starl Ernst, Nuns with Guns, Owen, Draconda, Ziggy. Big up to all you guys. Podcast guys, please stay hydrated, especially in what I can describe as this swampy weather. It's probably not that hot to other people, but it's quite warm to me today over in the UK. And obviously, thank you to everyone on Patreon. Couldn't do it without you. Big, big love. Big love. So Sean's on the show today. We're going to get to know him, ask him some questions, kind of do an expose and an interview of him. But we are also later on going to talk about his Stormcast list, which I talked about on Monday. And we're going to talk about, you know, how it performed, how, like, he kind of decided on running it the way that he ran it, because it was one of two, in brackets, shoot cast lists, so, like, very shooting heavy Stormcast lists that did well over the weekend. But the other one was a one-dayer. I don't know if we really count one-dayers. It's kind of like a date where maybe you just, like, you dry hump, but you don't go all the way. But two-dayers are, like, you know, the full shebang. But, you know...
Just a pay room.
I don't think closed off even in that situation. Yeah, so it's going to be really interesting hearing your thoughts on Stormcast generally as well, especially since the points drop. So that's kind of going to be the focus on the show. So if you guys are excited about Stormcast, like, tune in. But before we do that, Sean, like, I don't know this story. How did you get into Warhammer? How did that, like, when did that occur? like, because you're a cool fucker,
every other motherfucker who has been interviewed on a podcast ever. Like, Lord of the Rings was big when I was a kid, and there was a Games Workshop on the way to the movie theater, and I was like, fuck, I like Lord of the Rings, let's go in there, and had a look around, played it for a few years, got to high school, figured out that I liked pussy and drinking better, so I stopped playing wargaming for about 5-6 years, got money, you know, had a family, all the rest of it, went back to wargaming, and I was sort of getting back into gaming when the end times were happening. Mm-hmm. And I watched from afar, curiously, as the community was blowing up and just imploding and just going to shit. And I was talking to my local Games Workshop manager, and I was like, hey, is there any tournaments around? You know, is there, like, do people actually play this game? He's like, oh, fucking heaps, mate. And I was like, sweet, I'm a buyer, Cal Franz. Trust this guy. Obviously, it says, obviously, he's going to be, you know, honest with me, because he's a genuine, honest person who works at Games Workshop. You know, shout out Honest Wargamer. But so I started getting into it, and I slowly found other people, and we've gone from there. So I started playing Empire because I thought it was cool and it was what I liked. Started playing a few tournaments. Scene is as small as you've probably heard. It's growing, which is good. It's nowhere near the size of like the UK, the US, or Australia. And then me and my mate Sean were drunk at a tournament one night. We're like, hey bro, should we start a podcast? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, fuck, I think I got an ego big enough to record myself and see if someone wants to listen to it. Let's fucking do that. And he was like, bro, can you pay for it and do it all? And I was like, fuck yeah, I can. And I was, and then that was it. And like, here we are, sort of two and a half years later. I've traditionally played Stormcast, started traveling to tournaments last year, went to my first international tournament, which was a CanCon 2019. God, feels like so long ago. That was the first one you were at, eh, Rob?
Yeah, yeah.
2019, you and Nathan? Yeah. And I took my shoot cast list. I mean, like, are we going to talk about placings and shit? I don't know.
Well, yeah, we will do at some point. We'll cycle back. Yeah. We'll cycle back a little bit, because I'm very excited about the Carl Franz situation. What is it that made you pick up the Carl Franz? Like, that's a question I want to know. Oh, do you remember?
Because, yeah, so when I was a kid and I played Warhammer, I played Dark Elves, and this is not related at all. But when we always played like Kid Hammer, so we played all the rules wrong. We didn't know what the fuck we were doing. We just rolled dice and yelled, take it off, you know, and shit like that. But there was always this fucking rule that you couldn't bring special characters.
Oh, okay.
Because they were way too powerful, because some count was like, oh yeah, I've got a Lord Croak. He's going to pick up that piece of scenery, dump it on your army and kill you and die, and I win the game. So all the kids were like, no, I can't do that anymore. And we just all believed him because he talked to the GW manager and that's what they said they could do, because, again, integrity of the game. And so when I was an adult, I was like, fuck yeah, I have money. I can make my own decisions. That Cal Franz looks sweet. He's like some human dude on an angry bird lion. Let's do it. And that was that. So yeah, I brought him.
Perfect. No,
I was like, fuck yeah, I'm an adult. Let's do it.
Yeah. Fuck yeah, man. This is my toy that I like. Yeah. Hells yeah. I completely understand that. I also love that, like, you've just gone through this kind of torturous situation. Wherever you go, people are just lying to you. Are you generally mistrustful now when anyone tells you any information about Warhammer?
No, I think we're naturally jaded people in New Zealand, to be honest. But no, it was an interesting experience. It was genuinely interesting to... I mean, and to be fair, like Games Workshop, if I hadn't gone in and spoken to them, I wouldn't have been here playing the game as well. So they were like the shop front to speak to. But at the same time, it was really confusing, the relationship. You know, I don't know how deep we want to go on this, but it was just like, oh, don't give me a soapbox.
No, go for it. Like, what are your feelings on that?
No, it's just like, you know, it's like a relationship when you're younger and you're like, they like you but they don't like you, but then you hear from your best friend that they don't actually like you because, you know, you talk to someone else, and it was just weird. But I love the game they make. I love the models that are excellent. The game they make is great. It's questionable at sometimes, but if it wasn't for them having a presence in my region, I wouldn't actually be playing this game. So as much as I want to bitch about him, I mean, I do owe him some sort of thanks as well at the same time. No, it's probably as diplomatic as I can put it.
Yeah, that's super fair. I think that's really fair. I do wonder now what your interaction is with, you know, once you've done that part, like once you've interacted, like, you know, when you found like the independent scene, like how did you find the independent scene, from going into that Games Workshop, or was it something else?
No. I was put onto Facebook by Games Workshop, essentially, I guess. And then the people on Facebook started posting about events. And at the time it was like MoComp. And it was that weird American one where it was like 1,500 points or something.
Comp, was it?
Oh, it was weird. And then South Coast Comp came out afterwards, after like the first couple of bastardized comps came out. And they were running tournaments effectively off MoComp back in the dark days of just shitty Warhammer. And
my favorite is.
Whack you and your Seraphon. Just settle down, cunt, honestly.
Loved it. It was my favorite time. Yeah, it was my favorite time. Yeah. What are the points? No one knows, but they'll be different next week. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. How many attacks can we generate? 1,000,000. Fuck it. Let's go. You know, how many turns can I have in a row? 4. Deal with it. You know, yeah, and it was just like one guy, this guy Tim Lin, in the New Zealand community, who we refer to him as like the godfather of the New Zealand Warhammer community, because he just like banged on about there's a better way to play in his events and so on. So it was just like that one passionate individual. Like, you know, he is like a Warhammer hero, but he doesn't have the title of it because he's not a shell for the company. Mm-hmm. And he, like, if it wasn't for him, there wouldn't probably be at least the wargaming scene that there is today. Maybe not, you know, it might have been a few years sort of deferred. It might have been down the track. I'm not entirely sure. But no, Tim put in a lot of effort up front because he was passionate. He wanted it to succeed. He got a lot of shit from people going to Ninth Age and not joining them. And he made it work. He made it work. Just one dude, man. Was one dude in a, you know, in a big ocean of voices, and he just banged on and we all jumped on board eventually. And it was great. And I fucking loved him.
That's great. Big shout out to Tim then. Tim's the legend. That's what we'll say. Because I think that's an interesting thing. You know, if you never went back to, you know, the kind of Games Workshop, maybe that is their job. You know, like to like just put you in, like give you a kind of a safe place to like get stuff, and then just like throw you out into the community, which is far better to deal with you, because ultimately they're gonna, like the Games Workshop guys have to keep lying to you. They have to tell you everything's great all the time. That's their job. So like they have to throw you into the community, and then the community is just like lets you, because you guys as a community don't seem particularly shy. Like New Zealand, you don't seem particularly shy about putting your opinions out, which I respect and love, obviously. And you all seem pretty like matter of fact with each other, which I also think is quite cool. Like do you get that vibe from your community in New Zealand?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah, I'd say that's right. We've always been sort of a proud nation of protests, I guess you'd call it, where we, you know, for the most part, a lot of people, if they see bullshit, they call bullshit. Not all of us. I'm definitely not one of them. I try to be slightly more PC, I guess, or diplomatic about shit. But for the most part, people aren't, you know, they're encouraged to speak their voice, and they're encouraged to do their part, and they're encouraged to talk shit. And I mean, me and Tubby and Jimmy talk shit about us winning tournaments in Australia, because, you know, it happened, so deal with it, Australia. But it, you know, come take our tournaments. Oh, wait, you can't get into the country. You know? So yeah, we've always felt the right, that we've always been enabled and empowered to speak our mind, and that we have a voice, and that voice carries weight. So we do like to use that as much, you know, as our diplomatic flex, I guess you could say, as much as we can. And we don't get shown sort of what a community feels anyway. I mean, maybe we do. Maybe we're just too blindsided to not see it, but we feel like we don't get shown any attention or any respect or anything from any sort of external party. Officially, less so unofficially, like the bros in Australia and America and the UK that know about us are really cool. Not specifically me and Tubby, but just like more sort of wider New Zealand community. But I've had, you know, conversations with officials at GW and so on, and expressed this, and they've told me they're going to make, you know, do something about it, and nothing ever happens, so that's fine. But that's, I'm not gonna air that laundry out here, I guess. I've raised it enough.
I mean,
they like to slide in my DMs inappropriately at times with like stuff that they shouldn't, you know, like maybe their release schedule and shit, but whatever.
The Well, let's move on. Let's do that. We had a question in the chat from Owen. He says, does Tim still play?
Yeah, absolutely. Tim plays. He's just having babies at the moment. So he is supposed to be playing in this weekend's team tournament, which is a big blur thanks to that bitch COVID. But yeah, his handle on Twitter is at Tronhammer, I believe.
Yeah, Tronhammer.
Yeah.
We've been connected for a long time. Great guy, great list.
Yeah, no, he was big and he had a blog like all you guys did back in Fantasy Battles for whatever fucking reason. Who likes to read words when they can listen to them?
Not me, maybe. That's not me ever. Like, I'm not...
I can't English, that's why I try talking to a microphone and even then I fuck it up. So...
All right, so once you got into competitive wargaming, like what army, like Age of Sigmar, so like GHB came around, what sort of armies have you played? What sort of armies have you played?
Yeah, so I started off with the Empire, as I said, then that old like ghetto style book of the Order Battle Tome, Grand Alliance, whatever they called it, that massive fucking book.
Huge.
Which is the only place that you can find Skyborne Slayers, just saying, which they don't sell and haven't sold for like 4 years. Is that came out and it just like killed my Empire army. So I was like, okay, let's just jump on the poster boys, because I was observant enough to see what was happening with Space Marines and had watched Space Marines for like the last year just get new release after new release after new release, and this is before they broken rules in 8th edition.
Yeah.
So I jumped on that and I was like, well, they're always going to look after the poster boys, right? Because that makes sense. So that's why I jumped on Stormcast, and then that's when I realized that at the time, and this was like AOS 1 after the first General's Handbook, when Stormcasts were really good, and just before their second Battle Tome. And they had everything I wanted. They had, other than magic at the time, they had everything I wanted. So they had prayers, they had monsters like Dracovian Guard, they didn't have artillery. I'm just trying to think about what they didn't have. They had wide range of heroes, they had good battle line at the time, Lurays, believe it or not, and Judicators have always been good. So they were like a real toolkit army, like a utility army minus the whole bodies issue. So I started playing Stormcast. I've played Stormcast ever since. I took a hiatus and went to Khorne because I love Skarbrand, and Skarbrand loves to fuck. So like, I love Skarbrand.
Like, he does love to fuck. That's a great description of him.
Skarbrand,
yeah.
Fucks. Like, it's all he does. If you get him into combat, and that's like my whole game, it's just like, Gore Pilgrims, Tyrants of Blood, Reapers, and I'm like, yo, Skarbrand can go like 28 inches and he'll delete that whole 40 block of Mortec guard in a turn, and they're like, fucking do it, and I'm like, okay, I'll show you. And he's like, well, Skarbrand fucks. I'm like, Skarbrand fucks. You know, don't feed the beast.
I think that might be the title of the video now. I'm just going to title the video Skarbrand fucks. That's the title.
Oh, he does. He unequivocally fucks, is what I'd say. So, no, I love me some Skarbrand. And so I played some Khorne for a bit because I like big beasties. Because Stormcast have the Sardrate, but the Sardrate doesn't really do a whole lot. He's a utility piece. I just wanted like a big beastie that would run in and smack people. So I was like, yo, what's the other poster child to Stormcast? Oh, it's Khorne.
Yep.
Oh, they have blood purses. Anyway, I started playing with them. I'm like, man, they suck, but Skarbrand still fucks.
Yeah.
So, like, so I like me some Skarbrand. You know, double pile and just like doing fucking 32 mortal wounds a turn just for shits and giggles. Why not?
How do you rate Khorne at the moment? How do you feel about Khorne?
I fucking love Khorne. Like, I think the book is so well balanced internally that if more books were balanced like it, the game would be far better. Mm-hmm. It has useful battalions, it has useful battle line, it has a shitload of heroes that have utility and specific roles within the book itself. It has a mixture of demons and mortals. Probably the downside of it is that it has prayers, which are, I mean, like, internally that's good, the prayers, but externally, sorry, my cat's just jumped up, so she might come show her ass on screen in a minute. Just saying, you might see some pussy. The only issue of prayers is that they're uninteractive and they're unengaging because you can't counter them as a player. So externally it's like, that's a downside, but internally it's great. So no, I do love Khorne. I think the book is big enough and has enough units that there is like lots of selection, and there's so many useful battalions, unlike other books like Stormcast, where they have, you know, 15 battalions, but really there's only like four you might actually look at. So I do love Khorne.
I know for a fact that both Owen and Matt are going to come on the show at some point talk about Khorne. I'm very excited to hear their thoughts as well. I think it's a really deep book that can do a lot more than it's a bit like the Slaves to Darkness book, where like if you're a Slaves to Darkness player, you understand just how much is available in that book. But if you're not, it can seem a little bit daunting, I think, because it's super wide, which is kind of how I feel to bring the conversation on to Stormcast, because Stormcast has just got a lot of units. It's got a lot of units, and they all seem... Oh, there it is. What's the cat's name?
This cat's name's Pats.
Oh, hi, Pats.
Because she likes... she pets what she wants, which is... it's a dumb story. Don't worry about it. She's a black cat.
Oh, she's cute. Terrible for the podcast, guys. Sorry, podcast guys.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, guys. We're in your ears for... But
there's a cute cat on the screen. That's all we say. So if you're a big fan of cats, holler. So it brings me on to Stormcast. Stormcast is one of those armies where there's lots and lots of units. There's lots of battalions. There's lots of sub-factions. But sometimes it often seems like they do very little. Like, it's not really much to actually... What you read a lot, but you don't learn anything. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. You're like a... What is it? I can't even remember saying. I'm not even going to say it. I fucking butchered it. I shouldn't have mentioned it. But it's like a jack of all trades, master of none. That's the same. Yeah, like they can... I mean, they play in very specific manner, and they really haven't had an identity, I don't think, for a long time. Their identity was like, I drop from the sky and I alpha you and I kill you. But really, how long have they been able to do that for, and when was the last time they could do that reliably?
Yes.
You know, and oh, I can relocate around the board if I roll a 3+, or if I take this 110-point hero, I think he is now, that doesn't do anything else than a once-per-game relocate. So, like, their identity's been lost, I believe, within the game.
And their identity also has been stolen, right? Like, Eels are just like, I'll also drop down and do just a much better job.
Yeah, their identity's been bastardized by, like, every new army that's come out since then.
The Eels are far more
effective.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Yeah, like their way of playing was we drop down the sky and we teleport. Well, we deploy off the board, we drop down and we charge. Like that was their thing. And you're right, it's everywhere now. Like it's, you know, Pandora's box has been opened. So I do wonder how they'll reimagine Stormcast, like whenever they get around to it, because, you know, that's their thing. So I don't really know about that. That's an incredibly good point. Playing through it, like what versions of Stormcast have you played, or have you always kind of stuck to the same stuff?
Yeah, so initially I jumped on, I fully committed, I guess you'd say I went balls deep at the second Stormcast book, which was like it was after the first Zinch book. Was that like 2017, 2016, around
17,
then?
I think.
Yeah, it was just after then. They did the Zinch book, and I was like, holy fuck, Destiny Dice, and it was Stormcast Khorne or something like that. And that's when I fully committed. And that's when you can make one drop battalions for, like, 60 points, you know, and you'd have all the artifacts, and it was fantastic. And at that point in time, you could make a very, like, because everything was unlocked by Lords of the Storm, which was just, like, six Stormcast heroes on foot, which is very cheap. And you could build a list around that. And initially, I was using a lot of Paladors for their utility. And I was using a lot of Long Strikes before there was that whole Lookout Sir sort of minus one hit rule, just for reliable sniping damage. And effectively, they would, my opponent would score big turn one, turn two. But by sort of turn three, I would have taken out most of the heroes because, again, at that relevant time period a few years ago, there wasn't many sort of resilient, it wasn't like, and again, this is a couple of weeks ago now, but Petrifix heroes that were like ignoring the first wound and had 10 wounds and had a free up save and was just like, fuck you every time you did damage to them. So, you know, there wasn't shit like that in the game at the time. And there was just like a lot of Khorne and a lot of squishy Zinch heroes and so on. So
Judicators were genuinely scary. Like when someone's like, I'm going to drop my five Judicators down, you're like, oh shit, here it goes. Yeah. Like I'm about to.
Yeah, and you're playing against Chaos, and you're like, guess what, baby? Reroll ones, because fuck Chaos. And you Chaos are like, oh, we've always been fucking subjugated against. Everyone hates us. I'm like, yeah, because you're like the cunts in a mortal realm.
It's true. That's what they are. Yeah. That's what they are. That's great.
You're the reason we have this game, but whatever. So yeah, it was a completely different time. So I like previously I could get away with putting three Paladors into a combat of, you know, 10 to 5 guys and maybe winning that combat with some shooting support and scoring that objective. But now we live in the world of, you know, sexy grots, 40 Mortec guard, 20 Fire Slayer guys who look all the same and I don't know what their names are, and shit like that, and eels moving, you know, 39 inches a turn and charging you and delaying your whole army. So it was a completely different time. So at the time, it was a good solid hero base that had utility buffs, long strikes, minimum battle line. It's pretty much always been minimum battle line and Paladors and so on, utility rolls. Then it warped into when we got to GHB2, we got points increases, battalions became non-viable, went to more of a shooting sort of heavy army. I did play, what was Jack Armstrong's list? What was it called again?
Which one?
Vanguard wing.
The Sequitur bomb.
The Vanguard wing.
The Vanguard wing.
I did play that at one tournament and it was just the
worst. The worst.
Just so bad. Like, playing chess has more personality than that list.
Big shout out to Colin Cochran who played that against me and sent me to hospital. So, which is a different story, but still, Vanguard wing sent me to hospital once. If that's how terrible it was. To play against and be a part of, it was the worst.
And shout out to your healthcare for making sure that you're still here, because that list was cancerous.
it was horrible.
It was just dumb. Like, I remember I played a game against Tubby and he was playing Murder Host at the time, which was just rolling everyone. And I was like, okay, Tubby, you go first. And he did his Murder Host stuff and it was Scorched Earth and he'd been like two of my objectives. And I was like, cool, now I redeploy and explain to you why I win the game. And he was just like, oh, that sucks. And I'm like, shit happens, you know. Like, yeah, so I did play that once, it was crap. Wouldn't do it again, wouldn't recommend it. So I did do that, and then we went into more shooting base after that. For a good couple of years, AOS2 came out straight on the sort of long strike relic to Lord Aquila teleporting. Played that for like a year and a half. Got super bored of it because it's super one-dimensional and it's like a negative play experience almost like 80-90% of the time, because you otherwise lose really quickly, because essentially you're relying on a unit of three dudes, or depending on how big that unit is, but it's three guys with a 4-up save and 2 wounds apiece, so 6 wounds, so like, who can't kill that? Or the alternative is that I shoot you off in 2 turns, which is just like, it's just fucking dumb. And I think it was at that point that the army lost its identity, because that's when everyone else had teleportation or alpha strikes, or useful command abilities, you know, just saying.
Yeah.
and so I started playing a lot of shoot casts. So I've been playing shoot casts pretty much ever since like AOS 2 came out, because I found like that was the best thing to lean on the army to do. Went to CanCon 1 year, went 4-2 or something like that, came 18th, I think, at 200, and then went to Sydney GT with a variant of my list that I played last weekend, that which we'll get to eventually, and I won that. It was 2,500 points, though. So a disclaimer, it was 2,500 points, so it wasn't a legal list at 2K. But now it is, so yeah. And I went 5-0 on that and won that tournament. That was cool. And then went to CanCon again and didn't do as well because some shit went down that we can't put it on camera. Yeah. So CanCon was, obviously earlier this year. Yeah, CanCon was like January this year.
Yeah.
And I've been playing like, I've pretty much been playing the same list, or a variant of the same list, which is essentially shoot, move, shoot for 2 years. And I'm kind of sick of it, to be honest. but yeah.
Okay, well, let's get into it, because there might be people who want to run this list. So, like, a little bit of a disclaimer. I obviously have been tracking Shootcast, like, to give some background. Obviously, at one point, Shootcast was something that people were trying to take. I saw a list of, like, AOS Six Nations. Big shout out to the Scottish team, trying to run that. But I think just a lot of a lot of other things happened where it just they weren't able to do quite enough, or just like you said, that regularity of winning wasn't like you couldn't consistently push for a 5-0. It's sometimes you just get rolled over, like someone just had the counter to it in a situation. Was my tracking of it, and I think it slowly started to dwindle off. And if we look at the stats, Stormcast just kept tanking, both in popularity, like, you know, at start of Age of Sigmar 2, they were at like 12-13% of the meta, you know, down to like 3-4% of the meta just at the beginning of the year. And also their win rate went from like a solid like 51%, which is good, and then tanked all the way down to like a 40% at the beginning of the year. So they really needed some love. So with the introduction of the new GHP, a lot of those points came down. So I'd like to, like, when you saw those points drop, how did you feel about the points drops?
I mean, like, points drops and dice, but again, they don't, I mean, Stormcast is wider issue, unless you want it to be one-dimensional, is the rules, effectively. And maybe this is a bigger rant about the wider game itself, but there's no Always Strikes First in the book at all, and it's the biggest battle time they've ever released for Age of Sigmar. I mean, yeah, admittedly, it's 2 going on 3 years old. There's no Always Strike Last, there's no, like, I mean, the Activation Wars, which is like purely shooting these days, it's anvils at Heldenhammer, where you can fight or shoot in the hero phase, but no one ever fights because no one ever runs it that way. It does have Aether Wings, which are amazing and are similar to Grots. If people aren't familiar with Aether Wings and are familiar with Grots, where they interrupt charges. The Fanatics, that's it.
Yep.
But for the most part, the rules are outdated. The heroes are like strong from like 2 years ago. You know, they have like 3 or 4 attacks at freeze and freeze room, 1 damage, 1 in combat. The Celestine Prime's great, but he falls over anytime someone looks at him. The book has too much variance and very few standout units. And unfortunately, GW has priced it to exasperate the standout units and not try sort of raise the rest of the army up, yeah. Essentially. I've always thought long strikes have been good for a number of years. Aether Wings have been amazing since everyone figured out what they did. And then, like, the rest of the army is just, like, there because they have to be. And with the points changes, I feel like GW has just gone, like, yeah, shit, whatever. Just give them that one drop of talent that they wanted. And, I mean, there is a spellcast variant of it, but you can't run in this army, but you can run, like, a spellcasting army because the army did get about sort of 10 to 15% cheaper, which is quite a big deal for Stormcast because that's, like, another unit. Maybe 2 if you're lucky, depending on what you're running. However, Stormcast Magic is quite shit. You can get a battalion, which gives you +1 to cast, but then you just look at like Grots who just have like +1 or +2. You look at Flesh Eaters where they have artifacts and, you know, and courts and so on. You look at Luminef who just like don't even fucking bother with magic, you know. You look at Zench, who are pretty crap casting the army these days, but they still have these awesome things called Destiny Dice where they don't have to interact with you. Know, Seraphon, who are just like, fuck off, you know, I just cast them whatever I want. So I feel like they're, if you're not, I feel like the shooting army is going to be a gatekeeping army at tournaments because I feel like it's going to get enough popularity where people are going to bring it. And if you go to a tournament of like 40 or 50 players, there's probably going to be 1 to 2 of them in the field, maybe 3 of them. And you might have to sort of beat them on your way to like a 4-0 or like a 3-0.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be winning tournaments for the most part. I think they will be that sort of gatekeeping army. And then beyond that, I think if you run into any other variant of it, you know, if they try to do magic and you're a magic using army, then you just laugh them off the board. They don't have any bodies. They can still Gav bomb you, so they might get the unexpecting player with a Gav bomb, you know, with like 10, 15 evocators or some fulminators or whatever it might be, and you might be like, oh shit, that hurts, but luckily I have a screen, or that was one unit and I've still got 15 other units, so, you know, sorry, but I'm gonna win the game now because you have 14 bodies and I have 140. So
we'll never forget,
like, so the summary of it is just I think it's going to be shootcast, to be honest, and I think it's going to be a gatekeeping sort of mid-tier, you know, it'll be finishing at that 3-2-4-1 mark quite often, and then anything else, you see there's a million other builds, a lot have been talked about, none of them have really produced, so I don't know if you need to prepare yourself for them, to be honest.
Yeah, that's all great points. We'll never forget our coverage of the LGT where we watched Lovo throw his 15-man evocator screen unit just right into 20 clan rats.
A fucking idiot would do that. I mean, I haven't seen the game. Don't tell me he did it on turn one. Did he do it on turn one?
He did it on turn one, yeah. Like, he's a nice guy, though. He's a nice guy.
What's his name?
Lovo. Great guy. Great guy, great list.
Lovo. You done fucked up, mate.
Anyway. But it was a great, it was at least Tungsten Tyrants still love abusing him about this. His gaming club is the Tungsten Tyrants, and they love that moment. But yeah, the problem is what else can he do?
Was he playing anyone of known?
He was playing against Jack Armstrong Skaven.
You're fucking kidding me, right?
It's a good game. You should go watch it back on the Honest Wargamer. Just
it doesn't
search.
Sound like it.
I mean, we tried to make it fun. Commentary was a good time. Big love to Scriver in the chat, by the way. Go and check it out on the Honest Wargamer.
Shout out Scriver.
Yeah, watch the game back. Anyway, but the problem is they can't do anything else because they don't really have many flying units. Like, prosecutors aren't going to do like anything overly useful, like when they charge over a screen. Not like evocators do. So, like, you're right. Like, the combat stuff has to charge in a straight line at the screen. And can you clear that screen? That's what Judicators used to do. They used to ping your screen away. And then
when you drop from the sky, you have no staying power because you've got no buffs. Unless you have like a Gav charge, but that's not a resilience buff. That's not going to protect you from whatever hits you back. So whatever you hit, you have to destroy. And you have to be able to sustain a hit back for it to be effective or have any other use in the game. And Stormcaster, outside of their teleportation or stun off the board, are inherently slow. So... Yeah.
As soon as they're down, that's it. They're done, right? And Age of Sebmar asked a good question, and I would like to talk about the list now because I think I've vamped enough. Sebmar asked a really good question. He was like, "Do you feel like, and maybe you'll be able to maybe just tell us about your game against Tubbsy later? Do you feel like that this Shootcast or Stormcast might be in a good position in the kind of shooting game that we might be seeing evolve? You know, Salamanders, KO, because they can start their key units off the board and then bring them on to do their stuff. Do you feel like there's at least something there, maybe?"
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like, first of all, I feel like when you explain the list to your opponent, it fucks off their mind more than the list actually does. Because people hear, you know, shoot you twice, 30 inches, hit on twos, win on twos, 36 shots a turn, 72 damage quite reliably a turn, get fucked, take it off. And people are like, oh my god, I don't know what to do. So I feel like it wins a lot of games just purely on matchup. I feel like it is a good counter-shooting army, but again, and this is what came undone against me and Tubby, is that, well, first of all, I played the game like a Muppet, but I will let him take his lap of glory when he speaks to you. My army, so my version of the army, again, is 18 wounds. Yeah, 18 wounds at a 4-up save. And every 2 wounds I lose is so much output of the army that it's not funny. And a lot of people focus on that output, but they don't focus on the 14 units that the army has in total, which is completely MSU, which makes people overcommit or undercommit resources to deal with my army, which left me in scoring position. So, for example, in 2 games in the weekend just gone by, when I was playing against Idnef and Zench, Chanchos, I didn't win it because I could shoot the opponent off. I won it because I had far more units than they did. And I was able to score on objective-based missions where there's, you know, 6 objectives, 5 objectives, and I'm able to spread out my army. And I might have that 1 long strike left or 2 long strike left who can do enough to kill that little hero or kill the small unit of eels or the unit of flamers, which effectively reduces my opponent's army to project pressure because they only have 3 to 4 units now, where I might have 8 to 9 units because they've been focusing on 3 units of long strikes when the army has 14 units. You know, combat armies want to kill the birds. They kill the birds, fine. I get an army to shoot them. It defers them enough. I mean, should probably talk about the list now before I start talking about this. I'm guessing, right, Rob? Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, boys.
You're doing great. I'm loving it. I like it because you've got so much condensed knowledge. It's just pouring out of you. Yeah. So list. Yeah. What was the list?
Yeah, I'll just have a quick drink. I'm just going to mute myself so you don't hear me drinking
on the
mic.
I'll just thank
gross.
I'll thank everyone for being here. Big love to you guys. For being here, and you guys should definitely listen to Sean's podcast. I'll put the link in the show notes after.
Oh, thanks, babe. So it's a Stormcastle list, as we've been talking about. Anvil's a Howden Hammer, so essentially you spend a command point, you shoot in the hero phase, that's all you need to know. The rest of this stuff is shit. You reroll Battleshock. Cool. So you take a lot of, so it's a one drop battalion. There's two battalions that go into a mega battalion. There's a Lord Aquila who has to be a general because he gets the Vanguard Hunters as battle line. Mm-hmm. And then you can have one, I believe it's 3+ of and it's in any combination of a Knight Venator, Knight Azeros or a Knight Zephyros. And I've gone for 2 Knight Venators and a Knight Azeros. I wanted to run a Knight Zephyros because the Knight Zephyros gets to teleport with the Paladors, gets to ride the Winds with the Paladors, which is cool. And that's just like another play where the hero babysits the unit of Paladors. So if they were in combat, they could fight. Or if they are in the hero phase, they could shoot or pass their battle shock. Or they could do the auto run 6 if needed or reroll charges. And also because people are like, why is that combat hero running away from me? I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense. And they start getting concerned about it and they don't know what's going on. And the more that you can confuse your opponent within reason, the less they understand, the more that you have like a better chance to sort of succeed in your game. But anyway, I've gone for a Lord Aquila, 2 Knight Venators and a Knight Azeros, 3 units of 5 Vanguard Hunters, which you have to take. 3 units of Aether Wings, a unit of Paladors, and 3 units of 3 Vanguard Raptors with long strike crossbows. And if anyone does it in any other order, then they're just a fuckwit. Yes, yeah, take. I've seen people trying to take Hurricanes, and you're just doing it wrong. I'm sorry, bud, but you're doing it wrong. Come at me. We'll have a conversation.
Yeah, well, there was the other list that I was talking about the weekend. Again, a one-dayer. But it had loads and loads of... Oh, I forgot the name now, and that's a terrible role for me. Castigators. Loads of Castigators. And I was like, what the hell am I seeing here? But apparently it's a thing. But anyway, sorry, you continue.
Yeah, was it like a Soulstrike Brotherhood or something?
Yeah.
Where they...
It was an Anvil's list, but I would have to double check. So
I don't know. I was playing Warhammer this weekend, so I don't look at the internet, to be fair.
That's fine.
In tournament weeks, you know, it's been like 6-7 months since we've had a tournament, so I've been I'm not conditioned for it at all. I couldn't stand for a day. It was hard. But anyway, it's yeah. I work in an office job, if you can't tell by my humps.
You carry on.
Oh, I was just going to ramble about shit, bro. You need to stop me if you want to get a word in. But yeah, and then it was 3 units of 3 long strike, Vanguard Raptor long strike crossbows, which does all the heavy lifting. So essentially you have 2 battalions, one which the long strikes go into with the Aether Wings, and whenever a unit's within 18 of an Aether Wing, you get to reroll ones, which is massive because you have 3 units of them. And if you have one unit of Aether Wings, you've got an 18-inch diameter out each side, so you have a 36-inch bubble around the unit of Aether Wings, which is crazy because the unit flies and it moves 12 inches. And you can obviously run with that unit, so you can really cover a whole board with just 3 units of Aether Wings. Downside is that they don't have an armor save and they die anytime someone looks at them, so yeah. And then the other battalion is the Vanguard Hunters and the Paladors, and it makes the Paladors go 9d6 on the Ride the Winds Aetheric instead of a 6d6. And then the final battalion is those 2 battalions shoved in with the overarching auxiliary chamber battalion with the heroes, which gives it the real kick, which means every unit in the army minus the heroes have an extra attack on their range profile, which takes all your long strike crossbowmen to 2 shots apiece. And then so all of a sudden your 3 units of 3 long strikes turn into effectively 6 units of long strike, 3 units of 6 long strikes. And then if you are spending a command point in the hero phase, it again doubles the output, so you're quadrupling the output. So you would start with 9 shots, however the battalion gives you 18 shots, however if you shoot in the hero phase then you have 56 shots. And they hit on 2s, and you're going to be rerolling 1s because there's Aether Wings, or you have command points, or there's a Knight of Zeros. So you hit on 2s. You 6s to hit, a 2 mortal wounds, unmodified, so you snipe characters, not an issue. And then they wound on 3s, rend 2, damage 2, flat as well. So it's just very consistent output by the army. And it comes, in my version of it, comes in at 1990, so there's a possible for a cheeky triumph, ideally to reroll wounds. But it's just like consistently good damage It's a lot of small units, as I mentioned earlier. It's a one drop, so you get to choose who goes first between you and the change host, even with the new GHB rules. It's abusive.
How did you find having the one drop?
I love the one drop because, first of all, I think being able to deploy in a manner that you know what's going to happen next is shit for the game, especially when you have Aether Wings and you can interrupt charges, because Aether Wings charge in your opponent's charge phase. That's like your opponent's charge phase, and they can block charges. So unless they have shooting, they can't deal with him, or have any range abilities, they can't deal with him. Or even then, you know that you're going to give the first turn away, because that's probably what you can do for the majority of the time. So you can deploy deep and you can say, okay, you know, what's your max threat range? Okay, it's 20 inches or whatever. Cool, I'll put my Aether Wings up here. They're going to be within, you know, you can maybe get a 10-inch charge on the Aether Wings. Actually, I'm going to move the Aether Wings 3 inches back. Therefore, you can't charge your uneligible charge. And now you're in my firing range of my hero phase shooting and my shooting phase shooting as well. So being able to choose what happens is pretty big, to be honest. It's pretty big.
Yeah, because it's quite rare now. One drop battalions, we thought they were going away, and then obviously Chichos appeared, which is just a mess for no particular reason. So we really expected to see one drop battalions go away. And now with the release of the GHB points, some one-drop battalions have become viable again. I mean, you spend a considerable number of points on three battalions in that situation. Did you find the extra... I know the extra CP is useful for the ability to keep shooting, but did you also find the artifacts, the additional artifacts, useful or not really?
Yeah, so there's... I mean, the way I had it set up, so I had Obsidian Amulet, which is the 4-up... ignore spells and endless spells on my general. It's a Stormcast artifact because this list has no play in the Magic game. So if someone wants to cast something and they cast it, then you can't do anything about it. One of the Night Venators has a Luck Stone, which is you can change the dice roll of a, which is probably the one that's known amongst people in this list. Change your hit roll, wound roll, damage roll, save roll once per game to whatever you like. So you do it with the once per game shot from the Night Venator. So if he hits on twos, wounds on threes, ring one, damage, flat three plus d6 if you're shooting a hero. So the idea is you change d6 to a six, so it'd be 9 damage. Or it's a damage three plus d3 if you're shooting a regular unit that isn't a monster or a hero. And depending on what you're coming up against, you know, low armor saves, armies, you know, that aren't cinch, that can't just destiny dice it. It's great because you're almost guaranteeing, because you have the CP or you have an Azeroth nearby to reroll once to hit. And then you just really got to roll that free up for a wound. So that's probably the one people are aware of. Soul Thief is the one you have to take with the anvils that are held in hammer. It's crap. Don't need to talk about it. And then the Azeroth had the Lantern of the Tempest, which is sort of a shooting matchup. It's not a counter, but it gives me some play in the shooting game, which everyone holding within 12 at a Knight Azeroth has to reroll sixes to hit in the shooting phase. So it gives me some... I wouldn't even say survivability, because everything fucking rerolls in this game this day anyway. Or just like does shit because of reason that is not explained. But it, you know, it gives you something against skinks or flamers or salamanders or KO kind of order Stormcast counter matchup, you know.
I mean, it's nice, even though you get some rerolls on the salamanders, being able to just like reduce how many mortal wounds are coming in, because you know, at least the Stormcast don't have enough wounds on the board, I think, but they also they do have an armor save, like, and it's sometimes it's not brilliant, but like it's an armor save. Some armies would be super jealous and would really like that armor save. There are better ones, obviously, but they've at least got a bit of one. So yeah, like being able to reroll those is useful. That's fun. So one drop really important, and you most oftentimes gave the turn away. Do you want to talk us through some of your games, what you faced, and like kind of how those games went and what you did?
Yeah, absolutely. So I gave the turn away in all five games. I played at the weekend. So just a quick summary: I played a More Tribes game one. I played a Change Host game two. And the one drop is essential against Change Host because everyone wants to run, is it a Fate Master? Like the old guy on disc,
yep,
who makes the... Yeah, so they're two drop, your one drop. you know, go suck a fuck cinch. And then I played a Deep Konami round 3. I played a KO Army round 4, which was my only loss. And then I played a Change Host round 5 to end the tournament on a nice and reasonable note. And so the first game played more tribes, and I gave the turn away. I gave the turn away in every game. And he just went, okay, cool, that's my turn. We're playing Star Trek. It didn't move, didn't do anything. I was like, fuck, that sucks. I shuffled a little bit, and then he won priority. He gave me the turn. I was like, that is the correct move, you motherfucker. Because most of my stuff wasn't in a good position, and you don't want to, again, the army is fragile. It's pre-glass. You don't want to overexert yourself, especially when there's like an angry Stonehorn coming across the board at you. Mm-hmm. So you want to, why you want to be aggressive with the army and go on the offensive and push your opponent into a hole or back them into a corner or bury them in damage in a turn that it mentally fucks with them and makes them drop their head, that they don't feel like they can get out of this hole. You also don't want to overextend yourself and get cocky and therefore get exposed just to something going wrong, like a, you know, like a Nagash arcane bolting you 4 times and killing one of your units that are very, very effective in the game and that you rely on to do a lot of heavy lifting. So the nature of that game was just Star Strike, and it just came to the middle and I just killed him. It was fine. It was a good game. But it was just like, it worked as intended. And I played a Change Host army, gave him first turn, sort of as you expect, because...
Did you keep your long traits off the board in that situation?
Oh, okay. So, more tribes, I kept one unit off against Change Host, kept 2 units off because I wanted him to take the bait, because I wanted him to overextend his flamers, which he didn't, but he did overextend other units. And then I just deployed and went for the big dick double turn, and I got it. And it's just like, it's the double turn is another issue with this game, especially with the amount of output that armies can put out these days. And I effectively tabled him on a double turn.
Well, so it's an interesting question as well, actually. Sorry if you don't mind me asking it. What was your target priority in those situations? Like, you know, did you prep beforehand? Because that could be where you really make some mistakes, right? I know there's a lot of output, and like you said, like in the double, you effectively took
it's
most
just
of the stuff.
That's what it is. It's get 18 dice and roll twos, reroll ones, and see how many hit.
Yeah,
you know,
but
and then pick them up and roll threes, and then if you're going against anything with a 5-up save, they don't get a save, and then every failed wounds 2 damage apiece. And then double that, because that's how many times you get to do it a turn. So
yeah, but my question is, did you know, it's quite interesting being able to just like razor cut things out of an army. Like, you know, were you quite comfortable with what you were choosing to shoot? Like, I guess that's the real question. You know, like you're looking on the
board. Yeah, sorry, I completely missed that, Rob. But yeah, it is. You can. Because, I mean, Heroes are -1 and Zench is -1 to shoot white air within Holy within 12 of the Lord of Change or whatever that rule is. You still, every time you hit on 6, you're doing mortals. You know, you're going from threes, you're going from 2s to 3s and you're rerolling once. It's not a big deal. You have the range at shooting at 30 inches to be able to affect them when they can't affect you, depending on how they have deployed. I mean, obviously, everything that I say is slightly subjective because it depends on the game that you're playing in front of you. But speaking to my games, I knew I could deploy at a certain range where I could affect his army where he couldn't affect my army because his threat range is 28 inches or so, I think it is, on the flamers. Or 27, is that correct?
27.
Yeah. Yeah. And then mine's 30 inches. So obviously I can hit him without retaliation for at least one turn. However, if I get a double turn, then that just sort of lights out. So when you can drop anywhere on the board, wherever you like within the first 3 turns, and you have a footprint of 30 inches, and then effectively when you put the unit down, you put a 30 inch bubble around it either side, and it's just like this massive fucking bubble that sits in the middle of the board and hits more or less whatever it wants and kills more or less whatever it wants, as long as the line of sight isn't an issue. Obviously line of sight is like the crux against this army, like a fire slot, magma wall, palisade, you know, Sylvanev Wildwoods, stuff like that, overgrown terrain scenery, you know, as the list doesn't like, but shit, a lot of lists don't like my list, so it's probably fair that there's something out there that can hit back against it or has some play against it. Mm-hmm. But the best part of the army is, this is a long way to answer your question, is yes, I can individually pick out units and reliably kill them without the fear of repercussion, unless it's a shooting army, because I can put birds in front of them, or I can hit them from such a range that they can't retaliate to me, even if I don't have the next turn. Yeah. It's a reliable output with minimal risk while you do it.
But I guess the question, or the follow-up question, or the question maybe I was trying to ask is, did you feel like flamers seem like the target? What I mean is like, it's like in any game, it's target priority, like what are you going to go for? Sometimes when it's combat, you're dictated by, I'm moving towards there, they're moving towards there, we're going to clash. In this situation, because of the ability to deep strike and the ability to shoot at such a range, you're choosing that. So did you generally go for the units? Did you go for the synergy? Or actually, that wasn't the, like, it depended on each situation. Like there was something that pushed its way up the priority. You know, what did you shoot first, I guess, is the real question I'm asking. In that Tzeentch matchup, I'm quite interested.
Yeah. So in the first Tzeentch matchup I played, I took out the Flamers because I felt like they, with the Chanchos, had the effective threat range just to retaliate to me before I wanted to retaliate to them. So I took out the Flamers immediately, and given the way the guy put the Flamers in, like, the corner of his board, and he put some horrors up the side, and there were some heroes in front of the Flamers. However, he left me like a sliver of the board that I could fit sort of six long strikes down with some heroes as well. It was just like a perfect gap. It was just amazing. It was a mistake, I believe, on his end, but he was, I don't think he liked the matchup anyway. So they took out the Flamers, and then they could move to the heroes, because the Flamers, by killing the Flamers, took out the Lookouts through and all that sort of carry on as well.
Yeah.
So the heroes were even more exposed in their position, and then you just sort of dismantle the army that way. It is definitely a target priority list. It can, for the most part, kill what it wants, and depending on the matchup would determine that target priority. You know, when I'm playing Deepkin, the target priority is sort of dictated to me depending on how I've deployed as well. So in that matchup, I had to rely on my, you know, MSU build of army with 14 units to score the four objectives that were on the board, and total conquest, I believe the mission was, whereas he had maybe 7 units, I think it was, like 3 big blobs of eels. I think it was like 6, 6, 12 or something like that. Volturnus, 2 Soul Scryers, and some Shadow Warriors. So in that matchup, I was just trying to take out his vulnerable small unit so he had less of a board presence, so he could apply less pressure to the board than what I could apply to him, because of my perceived pressure of, I have, you know, 3 guys here with a unit of birds in front of him, which can countercharge, and a hero that can make him shoot in the hero phase, which can do a lot of damage. However, he has to dictate what I can shoot because of how his army works, because it's his army's ability. So he's feeding me what he wants me to shoot, but I'm trying to kill everything that comes towards me. But therefore, I also have teleportations and relocations within my army because of Lord Aquila. So I can, in that matchup, so I shot off the Chanchos, that was fine, it was game 3. I believe it was, and in game 4, no, sorry, that was game 2. Game 3, I played Idenef, Sword of Conquest. I deployed slightly more aggressively than what I thought I did. I deployed Winter Toilet, fucked off, came back, gave the guy first turn. He goes, "Cool, I'm going to charge you." I was like, "What the fuck?" He said, "27 inches." But I was like, "Oh, okay, I thought you were 28. But he was 27. We measured it. It was my fuck up, not his. Then he came across the board, and he just burrowed into a corner of the board. I dropped some more long strikes, baited him in, and he kept chasing the long strikes. In turn 3, I dropped the rest of my army because I had 7 units up, 7 units down. And he was too sort of, it's like a, I guess, a raging bull going for like the obvious target, where he was plowing into the corner of a board and I was spread out scoring the board because I had hunters. And again, he's killed way more of my army than what I've killed of his. But because he's relying on sort of 2 units to do his work, and I'm relying, admittedly, I'm relying on 3 units, and only one of those units survived, I still have the MSU matchup in that sense, where I can put 3 units around a 6-inch objective in 3 different spots. You know, I can put a hero at one side here. This is not good podcast content, but 1 unit here. You know, another unit sort of opposite that unit, about sort of 9 to 10 inches away because of the way, you know, 6 inches either side of an objective, and then another unit on the opposite side of that. And no one has a base that big to engage all 3 of those units in the same combat, nor does anything really have the output to deal with all 3 of those units at once. So it allowed me to score those objectives. So
Yeah, I get that. I get that. Like, especially, like, so if you've only got, like, two or three threats that can go and hit things, but there are, like, eight units on the board, you're going to maybe reliably deal with three, but there's still loads of other, like, even if they're not threats, it's that 10-man unit. And that's what's good about the shooting as well, is because you can kind of be like, well, I'm here, I'm just going to pick off those guys that are issues over there. Whereas combat, obviously, you've got to do the movement, plus you've actually got to, like, take the things off, which is, I think that's an important part.
Sorry, just to add on to that, mate. Like, I know you're trying to like get me to fuck off, but
no, that's not the case.
The hero phase shooting as well opens up gaps for you to move into the movement phase.
Yeah.
So when you're playing against anything but IDNF, and you can say, there is four guys on that objective over there that I need to remove, because that objective is not going to be, you know, game breaking at the end of the game, but I need to start scoring it to accumulate points. I'll shoot one unit at that unit in the hero phase for a CP. That unit dies. My rest of the army goes, you know, 180 degrees the other direction. But at the end of the hero phase, I can drop a unit on there, you know, because there's no unit within 9 inches anymore, and they can immediately score that objective. So it's about being able to like open up gaps in your hero phase and plugging those holes in the movement phase, which is where the teleporting comes in really handy with the Stormcast as well. So sorry, I just wanted to chuck that in there too.
No, I think that's really valuable. No, I appreciate that a lot. Like, I really do. Also, yeah, I think those are good points. I think that's one of the good things about Khorne as well, is their ability in the hero phase to deal with you potentially by piling and attacking and freeing themselves up. Like, it's one of those things that I end up doing sometimes, is I'll put a unit in and I think, well, okay, well, no matter how the priority goes, that unit can't move because it's locked in combat. It can run away, but like it can't move and then charge. So I can just affect its next movement phase. Whereas if someone can arcane bolt, like the cheeky one mortal wound that frees up a unit from an arcane bolt every hero phase is just the worst moment sometimes in the game. So what was game four? Who do you play?
Tubbs, and it was shit. No, he had KO. And we were playing one of new missions. It's the one where you take away the objective
Blade's
every
Edge.
Turn. That's it. Yeah, never played it before. Tubbs just totally outplayed me on the objective. That's like the simplest way I can put it. Is just so the way I play is I let my opponent overcommit in the first turn or two and get comfortable, and then I win in the last, you know, in turn four, turn five.
Okay.
And I let them sort of push forward, feel like they're on the upper, and then I just sort of do a couple of jank moves and fuck them effectively. And that's how I've always played the game. So I've always played for the late game scoring or late game winning. So like Starstrike I fucking love, because I'm like, cool, you can score for the first, you know, three turns uncontested, but I'll score one round turn five and I'll win the game. Mm. Or I'll score part of turn four and turn five and I'll win the game. And you're like, oh, what the fuck? And it's a bit of a feels bad, but that's sort of how I play the game. And this is a complete opposite. I got to turn three and I just said to Tubby, I just looked at him. I gave one turn three priority, gave him turn three. And he was like, okay, cool. And I pulled an objective off and he started doing shit. And then I just looked at him partway through a turn. I was like, bro, I just realized I can't win this game. And he was like, you can't. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like, because I allowed him to score too much uncontested. So he scored like 6 points. And this is going to sound real dumb because I've just been sitting here telling you how good I am at this game and how good I am at playing Stormcast and playing objectives and all this sort of shit. But I just got completely blindsided. And yeah, I done goofed. I done luvoed, as you were probably saying, England.
he's in the chat, by the way.
Shout out Luvo. Yeah. Your name's a meme. That's awesome, bro. So yeah,
I had exactly the same experience with the Blade's Edge. Like I played Nate. I gave Nate turn one. He just flooded the board, scored six. Mm. And then yeah. I started to grab objectives back, thinking, well, I'll just, like, I'm very much like you. I prefer, like, I'm playing for turn four, five, right? Like, and thinking it through. But, yeah, I think we actually ended up VPs as a draw on the objectives, but it was super close.
Oh, good
super, on you. Super close. But it was, yeah. My point was, is that scenario is really interesting because it does really reward you just flooding the board on turn one.
Oh, you need to go aggro turn one. You need to, like, apply pressure. And I gave Tubby turn one, he scored six, I think I scored four maybe, and then he scored five and I scored three, I think it was, and then he scored four and I was like, oh yeah, like I can't score more than what you've scored now because it's going to reduce a point every turn. And it was just like a real maybe come to Jesus moment, I think is what the Christians call it, I'm not too sure. But it was like a moment of clarity, and I was just like, oh man, I completely fucked this one up. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm just going to try to get my secondary, and then we'll call it. And that's what we did. So he flooded the board. He went forward. On the reverse, I had the turn drop. I could have done the same thing to him. I probably would have lost maybe a third of my arm in the first turn, maybe two, depending on how the priority went. But yeah, that was just, it was a really awful play by me. Last game I played Change Host, and it was the other new mission, the one where you like pick your primary.
Yeah.
And it was more or less the opposite from the game I just described, where I gave him first turn. He really didn't do anything because he gave probably too much respect to the long strikes, is what I would say. He was too afraid of him. He was too concerned about what they would do. And rightfully so, because only the Lord of Change in his army gets an armor save against him, because everything just dies super quickly when you got a 5-up save against, you know, Rentu. And it was a very cagey defensive game, but I was pretty bored with how it was unfolding about turn three. So I put, similar to what I did against a Deepkin player, I dropped two units of long strikes in his deployment zone at the bottom of turn two and started shooting off all his flamers. And there was a lot of change. And I was like, look, if I win the priority roll, game's probably over because I pre table you. However, if you win priority, you'll come focus on this. And he was like, yeah, exactly. And he won priority, and then he like change hosted most of his army back to his deployment zone, which he wanted to do off the long strikes, but I don't think it was the right move at all, because he just left me mainly uncontested to score five or six of the objectives that turn. And again, that's where sort of the MSU style of the list comes in, where you have 14 units, which is extremely unusual for a Stormcast army.
Yeah, it is.
And I was able to like to score all the objectives. He was like, okay, I'm going to change my horrors off this objective. And I was like, you did it, bud. Go nuts. You know, that's cool, man. And I think by turn four, I had sort of like a 6-point lead. And then I won priority turn five. And I, at that point, we just shook hands or something. So I didn't win through tabling him. He killed the majority of my army. I think he had three units left at the end of the game. He had a lot of change and two bastardized units of horrors.
I have a question about what the experience was like playing against the KO, like the output. Did you find it quite daunting? I mean, obviously you had shooting, and as you've said, like, it was very much to do with your decisions about the objectives more than maybe army composition. But how do you feel, like, you know, I feel like KO and your shooting Stormcast list have got some similarities, right? The ability to zip around the board, the ability to be where they want to be and apply pressure and damage and project power wherever they want to. Do you think it does that better, or it just does it differently?
Yeah, the KO army 100% does what my army does, but better, and in a more like homogenized manner, where it's not relying on three units of three dudes. It's, you know, it's got like the boat, it's got that little small boat, it's got the thunderers inside, it's got the heroes that are like debuff machines that just hide in a boat and a -1 to save, and then they all have gold where they can just reroll whatever they want. Tubby's list had like balloon boys who just fucking like YOLO across the board, shoot some shit off and die, but they're there and you have to deal with them is the issue. Like, you can't just leave them to do whatever they want. And then he's got the Arcanauts as well. So I feel like it's a more abusive style list than mine, whereas it wants to do the same thing, but it does it better. And it also has more inbuilt redundancies because it naturally has more wounds and resilience and less... the boat has like 20 wounds and a 3-up save rerolling, which is far... Because he's got like the artifact or the whatever the fuck...
It gives it plus two wounds.
Yeah. Which is, again, that boat itself has like more resilience than my three units. I mean, admittedly, the boat has less output than my units, but... The boat is delivering, it's a payload system to get like his army across the board and do what he wants, and then it can go away without spending resources, being command points and stuff like that. So I feel like the KO is a hard counter to my list, or to the Stormcast shoot list in general, I should say. And I think the KO list is just good in general, to be honest. I think it's just a good list. So it'll be interesting to see. And that's why I think Miami will be like a 4-1, because as much as I'll come up to the tables and be like, Change Host, cool, I'll win the Change Host matchup, or Seraphine, I'll win that matchup, I'll come across the KO and I'll be like, oh shit, you know, or just something completely janky that has a lot of ablated wounds and like a lot of output, like probably, you know, the Seraphon. So when I think of Seraphon, I think like Croak, I think Salamanders and stuff like that. And I think, okay, I can zone and screen and I can shoot. That's fine. But then if someone turns up with like, you know, 140 skinks and I'm like, oh, God, really? You know, I have to work through all this shit. And yeah, I could kill it by the end of the game, but he's probably got my opponent's probably amassed a lead that I cannot chase. Mm. Or if I come up against Skaven, you know, and they just got all the fucking bodies in the worlds or grots with netters and stuff like that. It's, yeah. But the KO, I think, is more, yeah, does what my list wants to do. Does it better? Does it cheaper? Does it more reliably?
Yeah, it's fascinating. Honestly, like I feel like I could talk about this or Warhammer with you for ages. I really do. I think that kind of I really liked analyzing those lists at the weekend, and I really wanted to hear your take on Stormcast and how that game went. And also, like, I thought it was particularly good that you came up against Tubbs, and then you with that KO list, because you've both got that shooting mechanic, and then like it. You know, go back a year and ask, are we seeing two shooting armies play against each other? Not really. Maybe we see two blocks of, maybe two sixes of Storm Fiends play each other or something like that, or maybe Halahart versus some Storm Fiends or something. But this is very a different dynamic. Both lists, I know there are 50 Arcanauts in the KO list, but both lists really are relying on kind of these key pieces to achieve what they want, but they're also able to shoot each other's key pieces. So I felt that was... I would have loved to watch that match. I said on Monday I'd have paid good money. Anyway.
Oh, it was fucking boring. He outplayed me.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, right. he outplayed me.
Well, I want to watch the rematch.
The masterclass was against the Idenef in the Zen Chummies, but playing Tubby's KO was just he played the game around me. He played circles around me. It was probably like Luva versus Jack Armstrong from what you just described to me.
Yeah, I got a follow up question actually, because this is the thing. A lot of people, whenever they talk about shooting, they then talk about eels. They think eels are somehow this magical counter. Do you tend to find that that's true, or feel that that's true, or not?
So, from my bias, I've only played one game against eels. Sorry, two games against eels with this list, or a list similar to this. And the eels. So we have a guy in New Zealand called Bo, and he plays with like a unit of 12 defensive eels, so unrendable eels, and he just effectively wraps his army in these eels. And runs around like a ball, and then everything shoots out of that ball at like a million fucking miles an hour, and you're just like, holy fuck, it's trying to drink water out of a fire hydrant. It's ridiculous. You know? and that matchup, it's hard because, again, as I said earlier, he's sort of dictating what you have to shoot. So in his circumstance, it is hard. It's not a good matchup at all. I don't know if everyone plays Idenef like Bo. However, I'm not sure if everyone is just... I mean, he has Shadow Warriors in his army, which means Shadow Warriors can pop up, shoot off my birds. Because if he doesn't have Shadow Warriors, if he has no range output, and he just pops up, you know, 9 inches away and goes, cool, I'm going to charge you. I'm plus six to charge because I got Soul Scries or whatever it is. And I go, cool, I got birds. They move 4 inches backwards. You can't legally declare a charge because you're not within 12. And he goes, oh, fuck. Then it's a great matchup because he's just exposed his eels. So situationally... I'm not giving you a straight answer, which people...
No, I actually think...
Unfortunately, but like you have to... I don't know. The data that presents itself, you have to analyze and you have to sort of, you know, make an informed decision of. And depending on the variables in front of you with whoever is playing the army in front of you will give you like an easy answer, yes or no. If someone just runs at you like an idiot, then fuck, the army is amazing because the army will just take anything off in two turns. Regardless of a double turn or not, you'll delete it. However, if your opponent has some initiative about him and drip feeds your units or sort of dictates the tempo to what you can kill, you know, what you can take off, the game becomes harder and you have to think for yourself a bit in that sense, which is not a bad thing. So the matchup, I'm not too sure. I've had two games of it. I've won one, I've lost one. I've played very different armies. I think if they're not defensive eels, I think you'll delete whatever comes near you because they're only four up save, four wounds. So every two saves they fail, which is at Ren 2, an eel dies, and you shoot them six times each with each unit. Six shots from each unit, sorry.
So yeah, plenty go down. Yeah, I actually think that the takeaway from that little story actually was how useful those Shadow Warriors were in providing the ability to just pick at that screen.
Correct.
Yeah, I think like that mixed arms, and maybe a good lesson for everyone listening is maybe try and find yourself like a Tan Man shooter unit of some type, and depending on your army, just to pick away a few wounds at like anything. Like there's loads of examples you could probably come up with. All right, well, Sean, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much. I'm going to include in the show notes both a link to your list and a link to the podcast. Before we head out, is there anyone in the world you'd like to shout out, or group or people or any of those things?
Yeah, just let me get my phone ready for my corporate show appearance. So the ROS Podcast Network. So just all you lovely people out there, man. Everyone who's like playing Warhammer, staying safe, being bros, having a good time, come see Notorious Age of Sigma or listen to it, I guess, because you can't see it. Our New Zealand community, it's amazing. Tubby, co-host, awesome dude. Even though you didn't let me get an objective, fuck what, that would have cost. I would have came second, would have been 1-2 Notorious, but you know, sometimes it'd be that way, Rob. Rob, keep doing what you're doing. You're doing a service to the community. I don't know how you've been doing this for 100 and whatever days you've been doing it for.
Plenty. Yeah. 147.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Get a fucking hobby, bro. Like, what are you doing?
Well, I've enjoyed this. Like, honestly, like, I've had a really great time talking to you.
Your shows, bro. I don't know if you enjoyed all of it.
I did. I did. I really enjoyed it. I promise. And it's also nice being able to like hear more of like. It's very clear to me that you've got like not only a great grasp of the game, but you, like there's a lot of analysis going into it and understanding not only how it works but why it works. That's a kind of key element there for me, and then also those matchups. And I like hearing that. I like understanding that there's that level of skill knocking around all over the place. And when as soon as you know that, it's exciting. Want to play Warhammer against you? Watch you play Warhammer. Those are all true things. So big love to you guys as well for like having a great community and supporting it so much. So I think that's
We're small but mighty. And shout out to the New Zealand boys. Love you all. I'm not going to say your name and names because I'll forget someone. Someone will send me a message and be like, "When you talk to me, talk about me on Rob's podcast, you fucking asshole." And be like, because you know, what do you guys say? Fuck you and your whole crew.
Yeah, that's the oldest one. That is the oldest one. Yeah. I want to shout out Chris today. So Serbator, he has been helping me with some tech issues which I don't understand. So big love to him. You know, loads. And I want to say shout out Twitch chat, obviously. Owen Jackson, Nuns with Guns, T-Man Cash, K-Dread, Grinaldi, Yes Meatballs, Draconda, love you all. Great show. Like they're saying in the chat, show great, Big Sean, shooty list. All of those true. All of those true.
Keep you, motherfucker.
Yeah. And big love to everyone that was watching on Patreon. Like Sean said, I wouldn't be able to have done this for 147 days without you. So thank you so much for being able to support me. And thank you to anyone who's listened to the podcast. Stay hydrated, especially in the swampy weather that we're facing. I'll see you guys soon. Join me tomorrow. Really excited. I'm talking to Mark. Mark was running a pretty cool Skaven list, actually, which was at a tabletop simulator event. Just gone, and he took the event out, and he's got some really cool things to say about Skaven, especially with the points drops. Looking forward to talking about that tomorrow, so see you then. Have a great day.